Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Costa Helenius. Moserei pääsee kiinni. Helenius kiertää korkealle, pääseekö laukomaan? Helenius tulee! Oh!
Looked as good as it sounded in Finnish as Finland, thanks to Buffalo Sabre Konsta Helenius with the golden goal. They emerge as champions at the Worlds yet again. So please, in the future, anyone covering the game, stop talking about how it's an upset when Finland beats Canada. It's never going to be an upset ever again. Finland's been one of the best and will continue to be one of the best hockey nations in the world. What a capper and what crushing disappointment again for the Swiss, who've been shut out in three straight World Championship gold medal games.
Well, this one won nothing in overtime. And yes, my Finnish is a little rusty, so I couldn't make up what they were saying. I know a couple of words, but I did make up the Helenius, Helenius, Helenius at the very end there. Which was amazing. And yes, Finland has always been a tough battle on the international stage. And it's fun because we had Tage Thompson's golden goal last year at the World Championship. That was the first goal at the World Championship for Team USA in almost 100 years. And now we're getting Konsta Helenius to go over to Finland, with Finland to Switzerland to help them get that gold medal with Barkov as their captain, and they played together. And now I'm thinking, okay, so how many times are we going to see Konsta Helenius in overtime next year, 3-on-3? And what
Sabres never won a home overtime game all year.
That's the reason.
Not like, that was a home game for Konsta.
No, you know what I mean. And not that it probably would have been to a shootout, because it took like 12 minutes to get a goal in the game, not in the first five. But still, like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, well, I want to see 94 on the ice in overtime, because I want to see what he's going to do, because that was a great, like, rotation high to attack to a shot through a screen, like, perfectly placed right there.
Which Buffalo writer am I thinking of right now?
I don't know.
The most quoted on the show is Matthew Fairburn. You know that. Yeah. What was one of his questions in the in-room poll this year?
Oh,
who was not a part of the Olympics this year that will be the next time around? Yeah. And it was almost unanimous that it would be Noah Östlund.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Konsta has now risen up the ranks from Finland's standpoint. Do you not agree?
I agree. Now, I was going to say that
I hope this is the last time outside of the Olympics that we ever see Konsta and Barkov play together again, because these runs need to keep getting deeper for the Sabres, for Helenius, and for Östlund, and for everybody else wearing
blue and gold.
You don't
go to the World Championship if you're in the conference final and if you're in the Stanley Cup final, and that's what the Sabres are hoping to get. And I think the easy answer was Noah Östlund at the time of the poll by The Athletic and Matthew Fairburn, because he was playing so well. He had kind of come onto the scene and all of it. Now, that same question being asked to the team, I think it would be a split, because the way that Helenius has played in the playoffs and what he's done in the World Championship, and, you know, obviously with Team Finland, who selects from a smaller pool of players, especially at the NHL level, but always have that great quality of players, and that is why I think Helenius is going to be there in 4 years.
It's a big hockey week and hockey month here. Obviously, combine this week, draft towards the end of June, and obviously Stanley Cup Finals are going to begin tomorrow night, Carolina hosting Vegas. Mm-hmm. Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com is going to join us here real quick to set the table on all of it, quite frankly. But just to this has become the talking point, as you know, because of another Sabre scoring the golden goal at the Worlds.
Yeah.
And trust me, I'm with you. If you haven't watched a single minute of the Worlds, I get it. Like, it's, you know, like we all need to check out when the Sabre season ends. And unfortunately, it ended a little bit earlier than we would have liked. But the takeaways from moments like this are, magnified, highlighted even more when you have one of the most respected players in the game today talking about Konstantelos the way Barkov did after Finland's win.
Konstantelos scored the game-winning goal. Is he a future of the Finnish hockey because obviously he's a young guy?
No, he's not. Of course he is. He's a special player, special human being. He's so young, but I would be here for 30 minutes to explain how great of a person and player he is. But he's special.
Thank you.
Sasha Barkov looked so good in this tournament, and it's great for the game to miss the entirety of the NHL season. When you watch a glimpse of how he played, it's almost impossible to imagine that the Panthers would have missed the playoffs with a healthy Barkov this year.
They wouldn't have, and next year that's the problem. Is Florida is going to be strong again, having Barkov at their disposal right there to be able to play. But I love what he says about he's. So, you know how you really love somebody is when you can make a joke about, you know, the impact that he's had with. So the question was, is he the future of Finnish hockey? He goes, no, he's not, with a smile on his face. That's great. That means that he has that relationship with Hellenius, and they've had that impact on each other to be able to joke about it. And then he said he's so young and so great, and I could be here for 30 minutes talking about him, and that's even better. And yes, they had that connection on the 2-on-1 goal that we showed last week.
That Lindy talked about.
About. That was the day after, and you know, that great pass, the finish, right? And then in overtime, just seeing again the connection. Now this is great. Now I'm almost starting to think, okay, where do I put Konstantelos on my whiteboard?
Where does Jarmo Kekäläinen have him?
Well, it's in Buffalo.
I know, but I mean, but like, where, you tell me how excited.
Middle, the wing, because he's with Barkov. He's playing the wing with Barkov.
Of course.
But you know, and now you're looking at your middle, and I know we're going to talk about Norway also, but.
Eventually,
because that was great for them to get their first medal in the World Championship. But then I'm looking at Robert Thomas scoring a couple of goals for Team Canada late in the stage in his tournament, and I'm like, do I want to revisit the Robert Thomas? But now I've got Hellenius, Oslin, Norris, McLeod, Thompson that can all play the middle of the ice. I'm like, there's a log jam in the middle of the ice. And yes, Lindy did say to us, it's great to have that luxury because center playing on the wing is an easier transition and all of it. But there's a lot of good centers that I want them to play centers, and there's almost too many of them.
The point with Hellenius for now is that when he came in with the Sabres in the playoffs, it was veteran guys in the sense that, you know, you have to recognize Jack Quinn's been in the league long enough now that he's got that status, and Jason Zucker. But the fact that Konsta slid into that roster and played with Barkov makes you start to think, well, what would it look like if he played with Tage?
Yeah.
Or what, you know what I mean? So this is all now, even more, that we can put on the pile of things that we will talk about
saber-wise
between
about Tage and Benson and how were together the year before. Now maybe that's the way they would have started the year. Benson was injured, and maybe it's Hellenius and Benson with Tage next year.
But that's the beauty of Oslin as well. He can play with these players also because his high hockey IQ and motor allow him to do so.
Yes.
And both Vegas and Carolina are loaded with players that have high motors and high hockey IQs. And that's why they are in the Stanley Cup Final, which leads us to our Sabres Live poll. Which team could you stomach more winning this year's Stanley Cup? You have two choices. This is not a Marty Distad or the other. It's Hurricanes.
There's only two teams. It's none. None would be the other. The Distad or the other.
It would be 100% none.
Yeah.
Hurricanes are 72% right now. Golden Knights are 28%. Marty, what are the fans saying about this poll and the final?
So, obviously, you know, some people may not understand the whole Carolina, Buffalo, and I know it's been 20 years, but somebody says, why would you need to stomach Carolina winning? So maybe they haven't been following the Sabres long enough, so that is a tough one. Vegas, only because Marner winning the Cup will make Leafs fans cry. So I love that. I can stomach Vegas winning the Cup, and I can, to a certain extent, stomach Carolina winning the Cup, but if you had to ask me, which one will give you a bit of a bad feeling up in the upper, you know, stomach and throat area. Carolina will give me more of that feeling. So I cannot stomach Carolina to win the cup. I'm Vegas, and I actually think Vegas is the team that's going to win this year.
I don't think most writers at NHL.com would agree with that. Adam Kimmelman is with us now because he oversees so much as it pertains to the NHL, specifically his combine coverage, his draft coverage, his in-season coverage, and now ultimately Stanley Cup final views as well. Adam, it's great to see you. Welcome back to Buffalo as we have combine week starting and the draft later this month. What was your prediction for the Stanley Cup final on NHL.com?
I picked the Carolina Hurricanes to win in six games. Sorry, Marty. I don't have. I don't have.
That can't stomach Carolina. But yes.
I don't have the emotional connection that you do. Clearly, 2006. You know, yeah. I understand it hurt. It hurt a lot. But no, I had the privilege of watching Carolina for four games against Philadelphia in person, and then watching them on TV against Montreal. They're a machine. They just run through you. There's a relentlessness to their game that, you know, you don't see with a lot of other teams. They just continue and they just come and come and come, and there's no quit to them. There's no slowdown. There's no line you can relax against, because all four lines, like their fourth line, Carrier and Robinson, those guys hit Jankowski, those guys skate just as hard, play just as hard, and can be just as impactful in the offensive zone as any other line that they have. And same with their sixth defenseman. You know, the addition of Keandre Miller brought them from a mobility standpoint to a whole other level. You've seen it in the playoffs. So I think Vegas will challenge them in a different way, because Vegas is bigger, stronger, and will fight harder to get to the middle of the ice than Montreal, Philadelphia, or Ottawa was able to do. So it will be a challenge. It's why I said Carolina in six versus, you know, yet another sweep. But I have a hard time seeing this Carolina team lose four times in the next seven games.
Vegas just swept Colorado, the best team in the league, Adam. And then you go Carolina. And look, we could probably look at those two teams. They're so different. Right. And the 5-on-5 plays, the depth, the way that they play, the special teams, there's a lot of difference in their structure. John Tortorella last won a Stanley Cup in 2004 with Tampa 22 years ago. Rod Brind'Amour last won a Stanley Cup in 06 with Carolina 20 years ago. Which one do you think will have a bigger impact on the way this series is going to go as a coach?
I'm going to say just Brind'Amour, because there's a commitment to a style of play through 1 through 20 on that roster that is just relentless in a way that no other coach, from what I can tell, to get full buy-in from his entire roster. It's just, it's remarkable how those guys will do everything he tells them to do, from the drop of the puck in the first period to the final horn in the third or overtime or whenever. And, you know, it's something that you don't see. I don't know if I've ever seen with other coaches. There's always one or two guys who kind of will go off script or kind of in the heat of the moment go their own way. It doesn't seem like that exists with this Carolina team. It hasn't existed in the 8 years that Brind'Amour has been there. He has a way of just getting guys to do what they need to do. Like I said, 1 through 20 from minute 1 till minute 60. And that, to me, is what makes him a special coach. Just, you know, call him a player whisperer, whatever it is. He knows how to get through those guys, and those guys have bought in completely.
Right now, that's the narrative. It was losing its luster after game one of the conference finals because of Brind'Amour and the Canes' history of not performing well in the conference finals, right? And it's a fascinating matchup to have a long-standing coach in Brind'Amour, who was struggling year after year after year to get them over the hump, to a coach who's only been there less than 10 regular season games and yet remarkably turned things around, or was a part of the turnaround for Vegas. I'm just fascinated by it because, like, what is the impact of coaching anymore? And what is the proper shelf life? And why is every situation so dramatically different? Like, Vegas got rid of a cup winner in Cassidy and turned it over to Tortorella. The Hurricanes could easily be looking at firing Brind'Amour if the conference final didn't go their way again this year, like it has in recent years, you know? So you guys are making all the right points about the two of them. I just still don't know what the true value of coaching is at this point.
I think when you look at the John Tortorella, it's not as much the X's and O's for him, because I don't know if he's been able to change a whole lot. Just to your point, he hasn't had the time. I think for him, it's just the swagger that he gives the players. It's the mentality that he brings to the situation. It's the, hey, you guys are still a really good team. You need to understand that. Now, he's got a unique way of getting that message across. And, you know, I was with Tortorella for 3 years in Philadelphia, and I saw how it didn't work there. I don't think there's a difference between the torts we're seeing in Vegas and the torts we saw in Philadelphia. I think the difference is having an older, more experienced team that's able to, for lack of a better term, filter the noise out and accept the message. You know, like, I had Keith Primo, when he played in Philadelphia, played for Ken Hitchcock, was very similar to John Tortorella. And he said what helped him get through to the guys who struggled playing for Hitch was, if you just ignore the way the message is being delivered, focus on the message. Is it the right message? And they would say yes. And he would say, just ignore the rest of it. Ignore the delivery. Ignore who's delivering it. Focus on the message. And I think that's what this Vegas team is able to do with John Tortorella, where they're able to ignore the messenger and how the message is being delivered, because it's not always pleasant.
Right.
But they're a group that's able to understand that.
If I'm to do my best Hitchcock and my best Tortorella impersonation, which one would you listen to more? The one that talks like this, guys, come on, get the puck in the zone. Or the one that talks like that, you better defend, defend, defend. Which one would you listen to more?
That, you know what? It's funny you say that. I saw them go head to head in the conference finals in 2004, yeah. And John Tortorella was not then the John Tortorella you saw now, that you see now. He allowed himself to buy into Ken Hitchcock, was a master manipulator on the ice, off the ice, and he got Tortorella very out of sorts, to the point where if Philadelphia, if you remember, they had Sandy Kapanen and a forward playing defense in that series, because they were so beat up and so injured. They had one more legitimate defenseman, nothing against Sammy Kapanen, but they had one more real defenseman. They might win that series and beat Calgary in the cup final, and the cup's in Philadelphia, and it's an entirely different narrative. Mm-hmm. But John Tortorella is a very good coach who understands how to get through to his players, but just he's grown up and matured a lot from then till now. So if you're asking me who would I rather listen to, I think I'm going to lean towards Hitchcock, but I might be a little bit biased because he was the first coach I covered in the NHL. So, you know, I'm going to go a little bit that way.
Well, those two coaches, Hitch and Torts, along with a lot of other people, might be largely responsible for why there was no hockey the next season.
Yes.
Because nobody wanted to score, and it was the dead puck at its peak. And that series, that Tampa-Philly one, holy cow, game seven, man, like there was just not much. And then it repeated itself in the Stanley Cup final that year with Tampa-Calgary. There were so few shots and so few goals. Not that there wasn't drama. There was high drama.
Oh, there was drama.
The Cavalier-Ginla fight, that was drama right there. That was fun.
Like, it was there was so much. And I love how you guys are talking about coaching and how you get the message through, because Adam, this is another critical week for teams as they go about learning about the next wave of players. The combine is here in Buffalo. The meetings are happening. The interviews with these kids, and that's what they are, is kids. And everything you just talked about with Tortorella and with Hitchcock, like, how different? You've been covering this combine and this draft for decades now. Like, how different do you see it from the players' standpoint as they come into these meetings, and how the teams go about asking questions to these kids these days?
Well, I think the process has refined itself a lot over the years. You know, I go back to 2008 is the first year I covered the combine and the draft, and just the way the event has grown, and you're going to see it more as we get to the testing phase, just the way the things they look for, the information they're able to glean through the physical testing, the fitness testing, they're going to have a few different events. One of them is a isokinetic squat. Another is a 10-meter sprint. I'm not a strength and conditioning coach. I don't know exactly what information you glean from it other than lower body strength and quickness and explosiveness. There's numbers and metrics behind it that you need a master's in kinesiology to understand. But it's grown from that standpoint, but it's also grown from how the teams approach talking to the players. They know more of what to ask. And then you talk to a lot of scouts and it's like, these guys are very well coached by their agents, by their advisors on how to handle certain situations. And it's up to the scouts and the GMs and whoever else is in the room to kind of cut through that if they can. Try to get to the authentic kid. I talked to one kid this morning and I said, anything goofy or silly that you've heard so far? And he said, tell us a joke. You know, like there's no way you can, I mean, I guess you can prepare for it, but you know, that's sort of the approach that they take, because I think what they're trying to find is, as important as it is to bring a good player into your organization, it's just as important to bring a good person. And Marty, you would know this from being in locker rooms your entire life. If you have good people, your chances of winning and being successful go up exponentially. If you have a bad teammate or a guy who just sours the room, it makes things that much harder. So I think a lot of what this process is finding out about the kids, who they are, what kind of people they are, and what kind of people they can become versus anything you find on game tape or in the fitness testing that they'll do. So that, I think, has become sort of the refinement of the process of the combine, sort of that I've seen it grow over the years that I've done it.
Two guys walk into a bar. That's the way you start, and then you forget the rest. That's the way it goes. And I wouldn't be able to tell a joke right on the spot. I'd really have to have one rehearse, I think.
Seriously?
Like, right on the spot right now, I'm like, do
you're
I know
like
a joke?
You're like the most spontaneous guy.
I know, but like, that's out
I've
of my
I've also
comfort.
Never asked you to tell me a joke.
Exactly. So I'd have to be well prepared for that or for a lot of different things. But on the other side, teams have to be prepared as well to make sure they get the right picks. Here in Buffalo, we've talked about Constant Hellenius, that pick, and Noah Austin, that pick, and Yuri Kulik, that pick, and Zach Benson, that pick, and you're like, okay, you can find guys in the draft, right, that is going to make an impact. Now, Gavin McKenna is ranked number one. Ivar Stenberg is ranked number two. Is this locked in for you, the forward and then the defenseman, or is actually the forward, and then there's defenseman right there, or is it like there's a chance that things are going to move around?
I do think there's a chance that things can move around. I think, you know, I sort of think it all becomes who makes that pick at number two, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if there's a guarantee that the San Jose Sharks, who are there today, are going to be there when we come back to Buffalo next month for the draft. You know, if there's moves involved, what can San Jose do? You look at the young forwards they have, Celebrini and Smith and Misa and Eklund, and they have the young Chernyshov coming. Quentin Musty had a solid year in the American League. You know, Kasper Hallinen is coming along in the American League. They have a nice group of young forwards. There's only so many top six, top nine spots around. Maybe you look more on the defensive side. And if you choose that way, does one of those top defensemen bubble up to being number two, whether it's a Chase Reed, whether it's Keaton Verhoff, whether it's Albert Smits, the Latvian player who played in Finland and Germany this year, played at the Olympics, played at the World Championship, looks to me like he might be the most NHL-ready player in this draft group. Or do you take another young forward if you believe Stenberg is a guy who can help you? It's going to be fascinating. To me, I think McKenna is going to go number one. Whether you think he's the best player in this draft or not, that's sort of, you know, the decision the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have to make. I think he is. You know, to me, there's two forwards and there's five defensemen that all project to be top end players. How they sort of sort themselves out, it's going to be fascinating to watch, not just through this week, but through the rest of this month.
Draft is in 3.5 weeks here in Buffalo, Friday, June 26th, of course, to kick it off, and then rounds 2 through 7 on the 27th. Sabres will pick 27th.
Yes.
At the moment, do you have late first round? They're not exactly sleepers at this point, but are there guys that you like late in the first round?
I think a guy like Casey Mutrin, a big forward with the U.S. national team program, is a guy who could be available in that area, you know, a big power forward type who skates well. He's going to go to college. He'll play at BU next year, where his brother is playing, Teddy Mutrin, Nashville prospect. So we'll see. He's a guy who certainly could be there in that spot. You know, there's a few that are, you know, interesting, you know, international players that could be over there. You know, a guy like Elton Hermansson, a forward with playing in Sweden. He's a guy who, little on the younger side, but had a nice season playing in the SHL. You know, it's so wide open. Like, I think once you get past probably those top seven or eight guys, it's a huge wide open gap that you could see the guy who goes at, excuse me, number 15 could be a guy that could be the same guy, could be number 35 on somebody else's board, and vice versa. It's as narrow a lines of difference, lines of demarcation as I've seen. And you know, it's across the board, you know, across positions.
You talk about all positions, and I look at like most of the rankings, and if you look on NHL.com right now, you have North American, European players, North American goalies, European goalies, but it doesn't seem like there's any goalies that are slotted to go maybe in the first round, maybe even in the first two rounds this year. Who knows what happens? I'm always interested in, well, you got to continue to build, you know, your goalie farm system and your prospects and all that. Is there anybody, goaltending wise, that you think is a goalie to look at and to pay attention in this draft?
Well, I find it interesting that five of the top six guys on the North American goalie rankings are Czech goalies. They all came over from Czech to play in North America this year. I talked to one of them this morning, Tobias Trabel, who plays for, he was the goalie of the year in United States Hockey League for Youngstown. And he just talked about how goalies are developed differently over there, as far as having a goalie, a dedicated goalie coach with every team starting at the U10 level and making its way up. So there's a real interesting way that, you know, how they've kind of coached themselves along. Michael Orsolak played in Prince Albert. He's number two on the list. He played at World Juniors, did very well for the Czechs this year. You know, Brady Nolan from the U.S. national team is number one on the list. Big goalie, 6'5", 202 pounds. He's going to play junior hockey next season somewhere, either in the Ontario League probably or U.S. Hockey League. Then he'll be at BU. So he's a guy who, you know, a growth project. I think that's a lot of what you're going to see with these goalies. They're going to want guys who are maybe headed the college route now because it's so much more wide open.
Yes.
Just as a next developmental step before they turn pro, and they're seeing harder shots, different variety of shots than they would as junior players in the Canadian Hockey League or the U.S. Hockey League. So I think that's sort of maybe where the trend's going to be. Nolan's heading that path. Trayball's heading that path. I'm not sure about the other guys, but it's certainly available to them, I'm sure, if they want it to be. But I think starting, you know, I mean, you guys have been around long enough. Once the first goalie goes, whether it's late second, early third, you're probably going to see a run of them, four, five, six in a row. So it's, I think probably late second, early third is when you'll probably start seeing names go off the board.
Adam, thank you as always. Welcome back to Buffalo. We'll see you again later in the month, of course, and enjoy the Stanley Cup Final too.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor, NHL.com. He's got the Canes in six. We'll have our predictions for the Stanley Cup Final coming up and talk about an awful lot more across the world of hockey. Good time to be a Finn. Konstantinos and his team, champs at the Worlds.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Happy June. We are 3.5 weeks away from the draft here in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. How much junk food did you consume while watching the Canes obliterate the Habs in Game 5 as we start around the National?
7.5 pounds of junk food. Because, you know, I went to a spot where you actually get things by the pound. And, yes, it was my snack of choice on Wednesday and Friday as I was in Toronto. for game 4 and 5 mm-hmm. to cover it with TSN. I just wanted to make sure if it goes to overtime, we've got resources to be able to get there.
No overtime, bro.
No overtime. No, there was no overtime because those two games did not go the right way for the Montreal Canadiens. Look, Carolina is a well-oiled machine. They push, push, push. Montreal could not get shots. I mean, they went 12 shots, 13 shots, 17 shots. And then in game 5, they had over 20. But it was not for a some dangerous shots. It wasn't good. Yeah, over 20. You're
hang
happy
a banner.
With that.
Hang a banner.
The over-under for that game for shots by Montreal was set at 18.5.
Of course it was. Why wouldn't it be?
It went over, and obviously. But,
right, because RJ always says, bet the over. You've got
bet
a chance.
The over. It was 3-0 early for Carolina. Eric Robinson on a very, very nice feed by Will Carrier.
A lot of X-Sabers in this final home.
There is a ton of X-Sabers. But, yeah, you know what? As Adam was saying, like, that fourth line for Carolina is good. They had a great impact on the game and on the series. Montreal had nothing. And now Montreal's got some choices to make. Like, Brendan Gallagher, he basically said to the media today, that's it for me.
Yeah.
He has one more year left at $6.5 million. And I think Montreal, with Sweeten the Pot, can probably get rid of that contract.
Send him to San Jose.
Vancouver has been like the rumored destination.
But
they got $22 million to spend before next year. So that could be it. Or they can buy him out and then he can go somewhere else. But there has been some conversation there.
Real quick, would Buffalo, in your opinion, be honest? I've never asked you. Not to be honest.
I'll be honest with you, Duffer.
Not even lying. I'm going to ask you this anyway.
Okay.
Would Buffalo have...
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one...
We use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious...
Check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
Taking Carolina further.
Yes. If and only if Buffalo had been able to generate offense off the rush. And that's the one thing Montreal, after game one, was able to do, and Carolina adjusted. But Montreal had played 7 games Tampa, 7 games Buffalo. It looked like they were slowing down. Mm-hmm. I think Buffalo would have had a little bit more to give off the rush and put Carolina. Look, Montreal, 5 out of 7 games against Buffalo gave up the first goal. All 5 games against Carolina gave up the first goal. Mm-hmm. That's 10 out of 12 games. I think Buffalo would have scored first and would have changed the dynamic of games. Carolina with a 1-0 lead is a different team.
You're conveniently forgetting the last decade against Carolina, where it's been hard to score against them from Buffalo's standpoint on the road.
Also,
I'm saying
like Montreal went 3-0 against Carolina this year, outscoring them 15-8, and then
somebody
they lost in
to.
5 games.
Yeah, oh, I know.
You know, so maybe the pass would have been just a. Lindy
so
mentioned
when you
the
asked,
game against Carolina 2-1.
Yes.
The Monday afternoon, they played on Tuesday in Nashville. We were at the road crew in Nashville. Mm-hmm. It was a great game. Lots of offense.
It was a frustrating game.
Frustrating game because they had chances to bury and they didn't.
I think it was very much representative of a great team that didn't get to where it ultimately wanted to get to. The Sabres did so much right from December on. That's why I use the word great, which I don't, and I'm saying regular season great here. So let's not say Duff said it was an all-time great team. That's not what I'm saying.
Boston series great.
They played great there. Yeah, but even, but the number of times, game 7 this year against Montreal included, they just left too much on the table.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't line up with all the numbers of the season, right? Because they were a top 5 shooting percentage team. They were one of the higher scoring teams. Their save percentage was top 5 from the moment December 9th came and went, right?
And like, it
so it happens. It's sports. You can't have two winners on each and every night. But that game was, for me, particularly frustrating in January in Carolina that they didn't come away with a win in, somewhat ironically, Consta Helenius' first NHL game.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway,
I'll say this. You asked if they would have taken Carolina further. losing in five to Montreal, I think Buffalo would have gone to six or seven or even one. Mm-hmm. So I say yes, it would have gone further. It may have not resulted in a win, but it would have been a lot tighter.
Well, I mean, wouldn't that have been awful to relive 20 years later, losing in six or seven to Carolina? But anyway, that's going to lead us back into our predictions and obviously reaction at Sabres Live on this day. But who do you got? And we'll dovetail it with more of the reactions to our poll question.
So I've got Vegas in six. And I was Carolina Friday. Like, I'm like, well, if Carolina beats Montreal in five, they'll win. Saturday, I'm thinking Carolina. Then Saturday night, I'm like, oh, maybe.
What were you drinking on Saturday night?
I don't know. I was doing landscape all weekend, so maybe that's why.
You were thirsty, at least.
I was very thirsty. And then I'm like, okay, you know what? No, Vegas. Vegas was able to beat the President Trophy, best team in the NHL, in four games. And I get Makar was not healthy. MacKinnon got banged up. But Mark Stone had such a big impact. And now William Karlsson is back. And I'm like, Vegas is the team in six. Funny enough, Carolina's 6-1 at home this year. Vegas is 6-2 at home this year. For a season where the road team has had much success, those two have figured out at home. Now, Carolina's also 6-0 on the road, so that's a big thing.
Yeah, they're 12-1. So
exactly.
But
Freddie Anderson, Ottawa, they hit so many posts. They were snake bitten, pucks in the crease, whatever.
Early in that series, games one and two.
Philly didn't have the offense really to push Carolina. Montreal had nothing on offense. So I'm like, if Vegas shows a little offensive kind of push, let's see how Freddie Anderson responds, because it's been three series where I feel it's a bit of a lawn chair situation for Freddie.
Well, let's tie it back in with the poll here at Sabres Live as to, you know, which team you can stomach more winning the Stanley Cup. I am going to answer, even though you didn't ask, I'm going to go with Vegas only because of how this is written. Like, as my prediction, as well as answering the poll, I can stomach Vegas winning more because I love Braden McNabb, the player and the person. And he is like he's the ideal non-star draft pick, right? It's like, hey, let's take a kid like this, and you hope for the size and the impact on the blue line for a decade and a half, right? And I think McNabb has been just that. And on top of it, he's just like such a good character, and I love cheering for character. I'll be 100% fine with Jack winning another cup. I'm having a tough time with the prediction because I really think Carolina's going to get it, but I'm going to go with my gut on this one, or heart, or whatever you want to call it, feeling, stomach, I guess is the right thing that we're focusing on, and I'm going to go with Vegas. Take us through some of these reactions.
No more here. Mr. Nice Guy says, I can stomach either one. They did what they needed in order to get there and earned it. That's one. And then I get the Canes 20 years ago sucked, and revenge would have been sweet. But Eichel can't win another one, so there's somebody that has more of the Eichel bad feeling towards one individual compared to sending it towards Carolina. So you're getting both sides here. I'm going to go back and say, okay, well, you know, Sabres are better off now for moving forward with a lot of different things and moves, and they're in the right spot. I think Carolina, for me, like, I still have that bitter taste from 20 years ago, and I had to rewatch on social media today as they're like, 20 years ago today, Brendan Moore scores a game-winning goal in Game 7, and you know, coming back from 2-1 after 2, and I'm like, I can't stomach it. Mm-hmm. I just can't do it.
This would make it even harder if it's the wrong one, but who's going to get the cup first on either side when it gets presented?
If it is Vegas, it would be Mitch Marner. I think it goes right to Mitch Marner because they want to stick it to everybody that The center of the world.
Plenty of reaction to our poll that ties in with that.
So if it was Carolina Taylor Hall, he's almost played 1,000 games without getting a cup, and he's been a big impact. Mm-hmm. When the whole
Natchez, that line had another huge night.
Rantanen, Stankoven trade all happened last year. People seem to forget that when Carolina traded Rantanen to Dallas and got Stankoven, they also got Taylor Hall because there needed to be money moved around.
I didn't love the move. I was like, what are they doing?
They also got a first-round pick from Dallas they turned around, and they got Keandre Miller out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's a great return.
Well, this is for you. Let's get into D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Steen voittaa kiekon kahdeksan. Nyt on ylimmä hyökkäys Norjalle. Noah Steen. Steen. Laukaa.
First time ever Norway has medaled in men's world hockey, and it was stunning and yet so well earned. They did not sneak their way through with a couple of upsets in this tournament. They were outstanding in round robin play. That's what allowed them to be in the quarters and the semis, and then they find themselves in the bronze medal game, and they withstand even more adversity, and they win it in overtime.
This could have been the ultimate disappointment, up to nothing, right? And they get a goal because Jet Greaves mishandles a puck, and then you get one off of a defenseman by Canada, and they're up to nothing just to see Robert Thomas score two goals in the last 2 minutes to tie it and go to OT. And it took a while. This is three overtime, and it took over 10 minutes again to get a winner, and then Norway comes up with the game-winning goal and the celebration. Fantastic. And I don't know any Norwegian at all, so I did not know what they were saying on the call, but you can feel the energy, the passion, the love. It was great.
Disturbed?
Disturbed. I go back to Friday night. Carolina scores the first goal of the game to make it 1-0. Stankoven comes in from the side, attacks the net, loses the puck as he's trying to get it in. Taylor Hall banks it in. And then this was challenged for goalie interference because of Stankoven bumping into Jakob Dobesch. And I know our feelings here in Buffalo about Dobesch, how he draws penalty and he flops or whatever. There was no flop on that one. I don't understand how the league counted that goal. The positioning of Dobesch was clearly impacted. His right skate off the post was taken off the anchor. He was elevated in the air. Taylor Hall slid it under Dobesch. I was absolutely, like, dumbfounded by the... And Marty St. Louis is like, what? Like, and it was a quick challenge, too. They challenged. They reviewed it very quickly, and they said, no. It did not impact Dobesch's ability to play the position. I'm like, wait a second, timeout. And I got a text from Tom Mecca, and he goes, how is that not worse than Hellenius and Quinn in game four when Quinn scored? You remember the double challenge? Well, double video, the puck over the line, and then they challenged for goalie interference, and it was actually Gouley that hit his own goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And they called that one no goal, and they called this one a goal? You tell me that the people in the room got that one right? Like, absolutely not.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, you know I'm right.
I was right with the game 4-1.
Exactly. That one should have been, well, okay.
I don't even care about that one.
And, like, and just so this people...
This just absolutely makes me know that I was 100% right in that game 4 situation.
Yeah, so here's the other thing. Henrik Lundqvist on TNT... had the exact same opinion.
Yeah.
So that's why it's good.
Okay. Hank approved. We're Hank going approved. To break. Back after this on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
NHL Combine continues this week here in Buffalo. Danny Briere, the Flyer, is going to be with.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This on the show here tomorrow. Stanley Cup final starts tomorrow. Vegas at Carolina. Memorial Cup concluded over the weekend.
Yes, and the Kitchener Rangers were the winners. They did not lose a game in the tournament. They went 3-0 in the round robin and went straight to the finals just to beat Everett 6-2 in the finals. Aiden Ellis, junior Sabres Aiden Ellis, and the son of Sabres assistant coach Matt Ellis was on that team. So congrats to the Ellis family. Aiden is going to Northeastern next year after 2 years with the Kitchener Rangers that finished in a Memorial Cup win. So only the third time in their history, and the last time that happened, Mike Richards, Derek Roy, Pete DeBoer's the coach. That's in 2004, I believe.
Fun fact, I was almost in San Antonio this weekend. Who do you have between the Spurs and the Knicks in the NBA final?
I am so loving the Spurs right now. Wemby and all of that. He's been, DeAndre Fox also has been a big part of that team. I just think the Knicks have been so good in the playoffs, just rolling.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick the Knicks, but I want an upset in the Spurs for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love the Spurs. I love Wemby, but I think the Knicks will win. Happy birthday to former Sabre Michael Grosick, who's 51. It's hard to imagine the career that he had. You know, in 98, when the Sabres went to the conference final, he scored 20 goals and 50 points that year. The next year, when they, you know, they go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, he had no goals in the playoffs that year. He's 51 today. Great part of history with his overtime series clincher against the Flyers in 98.
Great part of history in the trade that he was traded to Chicago for Doug Gilmore and J.P. Dumont. And Chicago picked up half of Dougie Gilmore's salary.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Paul Coffey's birthday on this day as well. He's 65. Roman Josi is not celebrating his 36th after yet another stunning world championship loss. Ladislav Nagy, who once scored 71 as a Halifax Moosehead, is 47 on this day. And we could be with you all day if we did all the birthdays. So enjoy your day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.